You know, there's two mindsets in higher ed. You've got the, this is an ivy tower, so, you know, this is a place for some people, not all. And then you have the mindsets of, you know, education is for everybody and higher ed should be for everybody. And so we're at that place now in higher ed. If institutions are going to continue to remain in a time and place where enrollments are dropping and declining, this mindset is going to be a determining factor of their survival.
The Digital to Learn podcast is dedicated to exploring both what's new and what's good in the use of technology in teaching and learning.
Our mission is to have the best minds sitting in front of our microphones sharing evidence-based strategies for digital teaching and learning.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Thank you for joining us. And now, the Digital to Learn podcast.
Welcome to Digital to Learn. My name is Brad Garner. I'm here with my co-host, Tiffany Snyder.
Hi, everyone.
Welcome. Tiffany, you need to clear something up for me.
Okay.
You've been totally excited about this guest.
Uh-huh.
And I am too, but I'd like to know why you are so very excited about having Nikki Bray on this podcast.
Well, as you know, Brad, we do a lot of stalking on the show. And so in my stalking of our guest prior to today, I know that she is passionate about seeing education as a social justice issue. And we're going to get to hear about that. And I also know that she's a basketball star. And I think that's fun. And we're going to get to reveal that today.
Yeah.
Nikki Bray is an instructional designer, academic consultant, visionary thought leader, and innovator committed to witnessing student success. Nikki currently serves as a clinical assistant professor and director of academic innovation and student success at the University of Memphis. Prior to that role, Nikki taught in the physical education teacher education department in the School of Health Studies at the University of Memphis for 4 years. She was an instructional designer at the University of Mississippi for almost a year. Prior to moving into higher education, Nikki spent 18 years in high school teaching physical education, physical science, biology, and honors biology. Nikki was a member of the University of Memphis women's basketball team from 1994 to 1997. Then, Nikki went on to coach girls basketball at Airways Middle, Wooddale High, and Central High, where she led her Under Armour-sponsored nationally ranked team to a AAA state championship in 2011. Nikki's research interests center around adaptive learning and technology-enhanced learning. Nikki considers herself to be a student-centered instructor who believes in designing learning experiences that put the learner in the center of the course design. Nikki earned her EDD in Instruction and Curriculum Leadership from the University of Memphis in 2017. We are excited to welcome Nikki Bray to the Digital to Learn podcast. Welcome, Nikki.
Welcome, Nikki.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I don't know so much about the basketball star thing, but the social justice thing, yes, I can attest to that for sure.
All right. Well, we're going to get to that, but let's begin with this. We like to ask our guests some rather odd questions so that our audience can get a chance to know them better outside of their expertise. So we're going to play Would You Rather? And here's the first one. Would you rather go skydiving or deep sea fishing?
Deep sea fishing for me, because few people know that originally I was a biology major because I wanted to be a marine biologist coming out of undergrad school. Mm.
Well, we're making a list of all these things that you're exposing to us today for the first time. And we're going to be tweeting those later this afternoon. So that will become common knowledge by probably 3 o'clock.
Oh, my. Would you rather go to a bonfire or a formal gala on a Friday night?
Definitely a bonfire. I love bonfires, fireplaces, hot weather, warm weather. I'd love to be living overlooking a beach in South Florida somewhere if I had my choice.
Do you have a favorite thing to roast or burn over that bonfire?
Marshmallows.
All right. And do you let them catch on fire totally?
Yes, I love them burnt.
Oh, good for you. Good for you. So next question, cook or order takeout?
Well, neither really. So my husband, we like to call him, well, I call him Chef Brayardee because he's an amazing cook. So I prefer him to like cook me a steak and some Brussels sprouts. So I'd rather stay home and go to Bray's Diner.
Oh, awesome. What time should we show up for dinner tonight?
let's see, today's Wednesday. He gets home kind of early, so 6 o'clock.
We'll see you then. Awesome.
Okay.
Would you rather be unable to use search engines or unable to use social media?
I would absolutely die if I could not have access to my social media. So I can do without the search engines any day.
And your preferred platforms?
Twitter is definitely number one. And then I spend most of my time probably on Instagram after that.
Okay, good. Last question. Would you rather have one real get out of jail free card or a key that opens every door?
Well, that's an easy one because I could never see myself going to jail. So I guess I would say the key that opens any door.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Yes.
So let's get more serious now and ask you some questions about e-learning.
Okay.
We've been stalking you, as Tiffany mentioned, finding out things about you. And you describe education as a social justice issue. Tell us more about that.
So when I first started teaching, I started in K-12, middle school and high school. And after probably 4 or 5 years, you know, I started to realize that there were a lot of differences in what access and the quality of education that students inside the inner city had compared to the students that were in the county and the municipalities and in the private sectors. And so, you know, as any, you know, teacher that or person that wants to become a teacher, you know, why do you want to become a teacher? Like they always ask you that to get into the teacher education program. You have to answer that question even like, why do you want to become a teacher? Well, I wanted to become a teacher to make a difference in people's lives and to impact people's lives. Well, you know, it quickly, you know, within 4 or 5 years of teaching, I quickly began to realize like there's something even deeper, you know, than that. And there, you know, it's a social justice issue. And so the longer I was in education, I was in high school for 18 years and K-12, 18 years before I moved into higher ed. And then, you know, I really realized like just the differences and just in between, you know, the haves and have nots. And then when I got into higher ed, you know, in my classes, I could really see the differences of students who came from these different parts of our community. Because the University of Memphis, uniquely, unlike many institutions similar to us, we actually serve our local population. And, you know, I began to look at the data and I could see, you know, those students who came from better schools versus those who came from some of the local inner cities. You know, you could tell the kids who had access to better courses versus those who didn't. You know, they just, the incoming knowledge was so critical and they would just get behind very quickly. And so, you know, with e-learning and other types of supports that we can do inside of the e-courseware, right? We can provide those supports for students and help them. But if faculty aren't trained as educators, right, Brady, they don't necessarily know how to do that.
True.
And that's where it becomes problematic, right? Because a lot of faculty aren't trained educators. I'm a trained educator, so I know how to do that. And so that just makes that divide grow farther and farther, wider and wider. And so when I started doing my dissertation and I really started looking in deeper and in search of my topic, if you will, my chair of my committee, you know, she really helped me to articulate, you know, that this personalized learning, what I was so passionate about was being able to personalize and meet the needs of learners. And I felt like technology could really help us do that. And I felt like, you know, when I taught classes online, I actually could get to know students better, even if I never met them and saw them face to face. It just grew that passion about this is a social justice issue. And education is even more critical than I realized when I first wanted to become a teacher and had that passion for teaching. And, you know, this is something that we all need to really, you know, when I was first teaching, it was like, hey, the government needs to put all this money. Now it's like, no, the government needs to be investing, like national security needs to be first, taking care of our elderly. Education needs to come really quickly behind that because, you know, we can end poverty. We can break chains of oppression. There's a lot that we can, you know, end a lot of mental illness and just lots of problems can be solved when we give students skills and abilities to go and be a contributing member of society. And education does that.
Well, your passion for this topic is clearly evident. Do you find other higher educators that you talk with share that passion?
Well, in my circle, yes.
Okay.
I would like to say that I feel that across higher ed. Sometimes I feel like I do, and sometimes I don't. I think, there are two mindsets in higher ed. You've got this is an ivy tower, so, this is a place for some people, not all. And then you have the mindsets of, education is for everybody, and higher ed should be for everybody. And so we're at that place now in higher ed, and it's interesting because if institutions are going to continue to remain in a time and place where enrollments are dropping and mm-hmm. declining, this mindset is going to be a determining factor of their survival.
Something I often wonder about is the fact that there are a portion of our faculty who have never worked anywhere else other than higher ed. So they went through their elementary, middle, high school. Mm-hmm. They went to their bachelor's degree. They got a graduate degree. Then they got a job in higher ed. And that's where they've been very successful. And I think they expect everyone else to be.
Right.
As opposed to folks who've, like yourself, worked in other settings, seen mm-hmm. other things, and then moved into higher ed. I think there's an entirely different perspective there.
Well, that's a great point, because when I was in K-12, there was a level of accountability.
Mm-hmm.
If little Joey did not do well in my class, I had to be prepared to speak on what I did to help meet his needs. Mm-hmm. So, did you contact the parent? Mm-hmm. Did you do tutoring? Did you refer him to the guidance counselors? What services did you try, to put in place that we offer here at our school?
Yes.
What did you do to help support this student? Well, in higher ed, we're starting to do that to some degree, but, it's not the same. And then with this tenure thing, which that's a whole nother conversation, I really struggle with tenure, because even in K-12, what happens when you get tenure is you can just move faculty from one school to another. And unless they commit some major crime or violation, board policy can't get rid of them. And so students are subjected to these awful faculty, and, mm-hmm. and they know how to play the game. So when administrators walk in, because they're trained faculty, they can start doing a great job and receive a good evaluation. And in higher ed, administrators really are, they're really handcuffed. Once faculty get tenure, there's nothing they can really do to faculty. They just are like passively aggressive. Sure, yes, sir, I'll do that. Okay. And then they go out of that meeting and they still do whatever it is they want to do. And there's nothing that an administrator, a dean or a chair can do about it. And so it's just really frustrating for me when I'm used to accountability, and only in education can that type of behavior persist. You'd be fired in any other industry.
When I was working in public education, K-12 settings, that movement of faculty from one school to another, we used to call the dance of the lemons.
That's interesting. Yeah. It's awful.
And I also think about the student you described, Joey. And let's say he grows up, goes to college, and is unsuccessful there. The tendency for faculty would be to say, well, he just wasn't meant for college.
Exactly.
And kind of put the blame for that back on the student rather than trying to do something to adapt his learning.
Exactly. And we know intelligence is not, that's not something that you get from your family. So if a student, it's just like any other, learning is like any other relationship. So, I feel like faculty have to do their part. They have to properly prepare the course and the content and the supports, be it, the opposite end of the spectrum too. These kids that are gifted and talented that we bore half to death because we don't provide the challenge that they're ready for.
Absolutely.
And, with these Carnegie Mellon, these Carnegie rules, seat rules that the government enforces where you're up 15 weeks, they got to sit in this class. What I like at the University of Memphis, we do a lot of things like credit by exams. We allow students for $60. You can test out of a course. You can come, we give you a study guide. You get a chance to study and prepare. Come in and take the test, $60 as opposed to paying like whatever $1,200 or whatever the undergraduate course may cost. I mean, it's a huge savings to students. Adaptive learning, which is something I'm very, very passionate about, kind of does the same thing, allows students to accelerate. And on the opposite side of that bell curve, those students who need more time or those students in the middle, you know, who, you know what, I have a lot of incoming knowledge about this topic, so I can kind of move along with everybody. But then this one, never heard of it, so I need extra time. This one, oh yeah, I know a lot about this. I can zoom through it. So in the end, it allows the students to control the pace, gives a little more agency to the student, which is, you know, in higher ed, they're our paying customer. Oh, what a concept, right? True. They're the paying customer. That's right. Not compulsory education. They're paying to be there. And higher ed faculty need to understand this is not the Ivy Tower. They choose to be here. They can choose to be somewhere else.
That's right. And in this competitive market, that is a problem.
Especially with online learning, right? Because Absolutely. They could be sitting here and be, you know, in anywhere else in the country or world, UM Global. Hello, we have students that are taking our classes from overseas these days. So, you know, with that kind of competition, you know, and I speak to that a little bit, you know, I think you guys have done your homework today. So I speak to that a little bit in some of the things that I put out there, you know, on my blog and on my e-portfolio about some of my beliefs about those things.
And we're going to give people links to those resources on our website so they can check into that a little deeper.
You gave the perfect segue to that reference to your e-portfolio, which I'm going to actually take the time to read it. It's just a couple of sentences here because I do think it's a very powerful statement. On your e-portfolio, it says, "The questions then are not do students care or do students want to learn? The real question is, do faculty and administrators care enough to roll up their sleeves and do the front-loaded work to give our students what we have never been able to give students in the past? A solid, deep, and comprehensive education that meets every student where they are, providing one-on-one support and guidance throughout the educational experience." And I just think, wow, what a powerful statement. Could you expand a bit on that, maybe how you came to that belief or how that impacts just your day-to-day practice?
Well, so when I spent my time in K-12, right, I had, 150, 200 students a day. I was accountable for every single student that they all learned. You know, I started out teaching physical science, biology, honors biology. And, you know, I was responsible and accountable for their learning. And, you know, it was like, how do I meet everybody's needs, right? And I mean, I cannot control what happens when they leave us. You know, I had students that would leave and, you know, in Memphis City Schools, they wouldn't eat again till they came back on Monday. So they left on a Friday afternoon and many of them wouldn't eat again until, you know, really eat again until a Monday. And, you know, they would go home, parents would be incarcerated. I mean, there would just be so many of these external environmental factors that would really prevent them from being able to be good learners, and it's not their fault, and you know, it's not fair. And so I knew that I had to really maximize the time that I had with them. And you know, when I have you know, a student in sitting in my 10th grade physical science or biology class that read on a fifth grade level, what does a textbook do for me? I mean, I can't do anything with a textbook that's a 10th grade textbook and a student reads on a fifth grade level. So I quit using the book. And if you ever came to my room, it looked like the art teacher's classroom. We made everything. We colored. We built things. We built models. We did concept maps. And essentially, I never used a book. And today, I still really do not use a book. And so now with the technology that we have available to us, you know, we can really personalize learning paths for students. We can more quickly identify, you know, what their unique needs are. And that will really help us to more quickly meet their needs. We don't have to wait to a midterm exam to kind of know, oh, you're not doing so well. Oh, you don't know so much. We can know week one. We can pretest. We should be pretesting, and most people don't do those things. Now, when they're not doing well at the end of week one, we can begin to provide remediation. If they're doing amazing, right, we can begin to challenge our brighter students, right? We can begin to offer lots of practice, you know, applying concepts that a human person can, one teacher with 150 students in a class or in a K-12 environment with 30, 35 students, you can never differentiate the learning environment based on these different individual needs. But now we can do that with the support of the technology, and now we can do what we humans do best is be humans. And when we really couldn't do that then because we were so busy digging, pushing students to prepare for exams. And now I can relax in the classroom because I know that the adaptive learning and the technology tools that I use in my classroom, gamified learning and other things like Nearpods and all these other tools that I use that give me the data, store the data, allow me to quickly go look at this information. Now I get to spend my time getting to know, like, what's going on with Tiffany? Like, Tiffany's been doing great, and all of a sudden today, you know, this last week, she's really been struggling.
We've noticed that, too, about Tiffany.
Brad just said that this morning.
Interesting. So now I can just kind of ease and be calm, relaxed, and I can just ease my way over to Tiffany at some point during today, even if there's 150 other students in my class, and I can go over and just kind of get to know Tiffany and just say, hey, what's going on? How are you doing? And I can smile and I can bring that humanized, even in an online class. I can, you know, send personal messages and send a short video and say, hey, Tiffany, you know, I noticed you're struggling. I just want to say, you know, hey, you know, what can I do to help? Or, you know, and you can just really bring the humanized side. And students need that. They need that component that we do best, and that's be the expert and be emotional and bring what humans, what we bring best, you know, what we are, you know, humans, and that component, that side of us. And we can't do that before. I mean, I couldn't. And I tell people all the time, like, when you think about adaptive learning, people say, well, we've been doing adaptive forever. No, so, you know, Pressey in 1927 tried to say he was doing adaptive learning. But you cannot do adaptive learning because you cannot adjust dynamically in real time to all learners at the same time. You cannot do that. None of us are that good. I know I'm not that good. So let me just say that for myself. If somebody else is, I really would love to see it. I would pay good money to see it. You cannot do it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on Christmas morning. I mean, you're not doing that. None of us are doing that. But a system, a computer mediated system, can do that. So what we can do is offer personalized learning. We cannot offer adaptive learning. It has to be computer mediated for it to be adaptive. We can differentiate the learning experience and we can personalize the learning experience, but we can't adapt the learning experience.
If you thought that was amazing and life-changing, then you'll want to tune in for episode number 2.
Thank you for joining us on Digital to Learn.
If you enjoyed this podcast, there are 3 things we ask you to do. 1, come back and join us again. 2, tell your friends about us. And 3, give us a positive ranking on your favorite podcast platform.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
It's a digital world.
Always keep learning.